What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
No algorithm has ever jammed out to its favorite song, dreamed of starting a band, or watched its favorite movie 100 times, or even watched a single movie for that matter, which is why an algorithm has no business picking the films that you watch. Mubi is a curated online cinema streaming exceptional films from around the world. Each day, they introduce a new hand-picked gem, and you have 1 month to watch it. Whether it's a forgotten classic, a festival darling, or a groundbreaking masterpiece, every single film is hand-selected by experts. Try Mubi for free. That's MUBI.com/words. And you will love this thing. This has changed my life in the most positive way. You get amazing cinema. Such good stuff. That, like, I love movies, and it shows me stuff that I'm like, yo, I've never even heard of this. And I watch it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. So please, 30 days for free. Mubi.com, MUBI.com/words, 30 days for free. All right, now on to the show. Hey, hello, everybody. It's Ray Harkins, and you're listening to 100 Words or Less, the podcast. We're hanging out, talking independent music, whether it's punk, hardcore, indie rock, whatever genre you like, we probably cover in some capacity, as long as it's of the independent variety. And today is, of course, no exception, because if it was an exception, I would be breaking my own rules, which would make me a liar, and I wouldn't expect you to listen to the show anyways. You like that? That's like, I felt like I just did some algebra right there. Dave Walker. Dave Walker is the vocalist for Harvest, which is, in my opinion, a legendary 90s hardcore band that, resurfaced in the aughts when they put out a 7-inch. And he also sang for a band called Season of Fire, which is where I ran into him. And then he also participated in a ton of other projects, namely Krakatoa. That was a spectacular band that he did. Well, I would call it project because it was in the studio. They might have played one show. I can't recall. But Dave is, he's just a lifelong friend. Like, we met in the early 2000s, and, you know, we'll discuss this at the very beginning of the episode. But we just became fast friends, and he's one of those people where I might not see him for a couple of years, and then we run into each other, and it's like slipping right into an old pair of comfortable shoes. So, and that's the beauty of independent music. I just love that. But let's get some business pleasantries out of the way. NoEcho.net. Are you reading that website? Are you consuming the cool content they have on that website? You should. I do. I love that website. Carlos does a great job with making sure that he covers all things punk and hardcore, and aggressive music related. He actually just did a really, really in-depth interview with one of the members of Uniform Choice and Unity. It was a great look through the prism of early 80s hardcore here in Orange County, California, and I loved it because both of those bands were pretty influential to me as I started to get into punk and hardcore. But visit the website, please, noecho.net. Perfect. Perfect combination with this podcast and that website. And what else I got to tell you? Well, I went to a ton of shows this past week. I saw my good friends in Touche Amore play a pretty close to sold-out show with City of Caterpillar and Thou, and that show was awesome. Like, all of these shows were just really life-giving because, you know, sometimes if you go to too many shows, it, you know, it becomes rote and it becomes maybe a little less special. So then when you, you know, maybe make yourself scarce because, you know, clearly as you grow older, you have more responsibilities. And now when I go to a show, I feel, I don't know, just this tickle in the back of my head where it's just like, I decided to be here. This is intentional. This is not me just finding something to do on a Friday night or whatever. And then I also saw my good friends in Pianos Become the Teeth, and they were inspirational. And they played With Me Without You, which I eventually will have someone on from that band on this show because, I just love that band. But I did do two shows that night, and I saw my friends in Moose Blood play, and all those shows were just great. Just, like I said, soul-filling. I love that. So I hope you find some soul-filling shows in the near future. And, that's all I got. So here is my discussion with Dave Walker. Gets a little misty towards the middle, because we talk about some stuff that's, just really inspirational. And I really appreciated Dave coming on the show. So here is him. Here is him. Here's he. There we go. Here he is. And I will talk to you after the episode.
Let it out of time. Let it out of this life again. Let it out of silence. Cry it out.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but we first met when we toured together. When up in Canada, correct? Like, to your recollection?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, we toured together, Taken and Season of Fire. And, you know, I had no preconceived notions of you beyond the fact that, you know, I enjoyed, you know, Harvest, Krakatoa, like all the musical projects that you were involved in. But this, to me, this is the beauty of, you know, punk and hardcore and independent music, where it's like, you know, you and I were aware of each other because of our mutual, you know, friendship with Chris Logan. And then, you know, upon the first day meeting each other, we were just like, oh yeah, like, so we're like totally friends immediately. Like, it took us like five minutes to dive into that. And then you were even so kind as to have an old Harvest shirt for me, which I was like, what the? And like, I just remember telling Logan where I was like, oh yeah, I love Harvest. I'm so excited that you're working with Season of Fire, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, you bring me a Harvest shirt. Anyways, it's all tied up in the fact that that's incredibly thoughtful, Dave. Like, and the fact that I still remember it, you know, whatever, 15 years later is meaningful. And like, is that sort of, instant connectivity, part and parcel of your experience within, you know, kind of music and this music scene? And I guess the second component of that is the fact that, you know, that was an incredibly thoughtful thing to do, even though it's, you know, small potatoes, just giving a t-shirt to somebody. But that's a, you know, were you always kind of that thoughtful?
I mean, I probably have become more thoughtful as I advance in the years, but I would say, I think friendships to me are really valuable and precious, and I never want to sell them short, and I've had so many friends come and go. And I would say too that after Harvest disbanded in 99, and it was mainly me like saying that like I had some other things going on in my life that were going to take priority, and the other guys wanted to go ahead. And that's a whole other conversation. But the point being is that I lost a lot of friends at that time too. So by me letting go of Harvest, I really let go of a lot of people, and it was really a way of my sort of like it sort of weeded out those people who were going to be my friends for my life, and my friends who were there only when I was in a band. So I wasn't Dave from Harvest. I was Dave Walker at that time, and so then it was sort of an interesting thing. And I think anybody who's been in a band that's that's had some notoriety, whatever it may be, kind of goes through that. There's like the fan, there's like the people who like you because you're in the band, and then there's the people who just like you, hopefully, for who you are as a person, not because you're in a band. It doesn't, to me, it was never a thing. It was just like, this is a band I do because I enjoy it, and that's all it is, and it's a punk band. And you know, things nowadays are much different, and there's this term called superfan and those funny things, but I digress wholeheartedly. But anyway, point being is, especially since that point when I really realized that, like, there were a lot of people there during the 90s with me, and a lot of those people just didn't want to, like, talk to me anymore or just, like, hang out anymore, even though I'm the same exact person. I believe the exact same thing. I was, you know, whatever it might be. I just don't, for whatever reasons, it just up and left. So it was an interesting time and for me. And so it made me a little bitter at the time, of course, because I was like, what's wrong with me? Like, you know, so I went through my own little bits, but I really realized that, like, you know, those people who you meet, who you feel really genuine about, you know, I was going to hold on to those, and you're one of those people, and Chris is one of those people, and I mean, those, you know, that's just, so I say that from the time that I met you, that was where I was coming from, that was a place where I was, but I think all my life, you know, I haven't had, like, a ton of friends, so, you know, I was, you know, wasn't popular in high school, wasn't just popular in general. So I think a lot of people who grew up in punk and hardcore, like, weren't popular kids. Like, right, usually were the kids who got, you know, I got threatened a lot, called the term faggot or whatever you want to call it, but often in high school and things like that. And kids wanted to, you know, potentially hurt me or whatever it is. And, you know, just, I was an outcast and all this stuff, you know, at certain times, certain phases I was in. I'd never had a lot of friends, and those I've had have been very dear to me. And then in Harvest, like, I thought, you know, it was just a weird time. So, anyway, long story short, and very convoluted way of telling you that, I hold friendships really close and very dear to me. And,
right.
And, yeah. And I appreciate yours.
Well, I'm glad. And I appreciate yours, but I really appreciate that, the layout of it, because I think, you know, a thread I wanted to pull on in there was the fact that I think that, you know, the connection of people with, you know, bands. And then obviously, like you said, people want to know you because, you know, you're Dave Walker from Harvest. And, like, once the, you know, the sort of, you know, idolatry, even though, you know, it's such on a small level on our scene, but there's still some of that where you're just like, oh, wow, this person's on a stage. Like, they must be cool. So, like, I want to know them. There's I believe it's kind of hardwired in our DNA, and we have to, you know, push it away and unlearn that, that looking up to you aspect of it. But I really like the fact that you were cognizant of the fact that so many people peeled away from you because you weren't that person anymore. You weren't Dave Walker from Harvest. You were, like you said, just Dave Walker. And I think a lot of people struggle with that when they go from, you know, one musical project to another, or just, you know, don't contribute in the same way that they, you know, once had when they were in a band or whatever. It's like, you know, do you actually like me for me, or just because I got a on stage and have a dumb microphone in my hand?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think it was very interesting. The last kind of like little tour we had done too. It was cool, 'cause it was really about those people who I think it was really fun, because that last thing we did, and it was 2012. We did about 16 or 17 shows in a small, like, I mean, it was a legitimate East Coast tour, and, like, it, you know, that was that many shows in one chunk every night. And those people who came out to that were really, like, core people. Like, they really showed up, and they were like, a lot of people I have, you know, kept in touch with over the years, and or who really valued, you know, being connected, and even if it was through the music, but they weren't just, I don't know. It was really great seeing it, and not all, and all the shows were really low key, and for the most part, very small, and really like intimate, and I think that there's nothing better than that. These grand shows or whatever, these big events and stuff like that are sort of displace you in the way, and again, and I think make it harder for people to talk. And so I think that these smaller, like, you know, doing a tour that's really, really small and focused, and especially since, like, people haven't listened to us in 20 years, so of course it's going to be geriatric style in there. So,
right.
Anyway. Whatever.
Yeah, no.
I'm just saying.
No, I but
very intimate.
Yeah, I like that mentality. I totally understand where you're coming from. So, you know, kind of bringing you back to, you know, your origin story, as it were. You know, you were born and raised in the Minneapolis area, correct?
So I was I was born in southern Minnesota in a town called Northfield. We lived in the country. My father was a professor at a college. And then I did spend a good chunk of my life in Southern California too, and that's where my grandmother lived, and my father was originally from there, so he spent his childhood there in Long Beach. And so I spent a great deal of time Seal Beach, Huntington Beach, Long Beach, growing up, and it was just part of my childhood. So we would like literally go there every year or every other year. Like clockwork, in the wintertime. My father had sabbatical. They must have written some crazy notes to my school, because they would stay for like a month,
right?
month or longer. I don't know how that all worked. Now having a child and like realizing that, like, yeah, that shit doesn't fly, you know, like,
yeah.
So I can't even imagine, you know, the slack we would get for taking our son out of kindergarten now for a month's time. But anyway,
yeah.
So I was kind of like raised in both. You know, I spent majority of my time was in southern Minnesota, but a lot of my winters and some of my summers were spent in Long Beach, California. So it was kind of cool. Like, I had this very urban side of my life, and then the other side was the polar opposite. We had a hobby farm. My father had the summers off, so we were just like gardening all the time and just doing that sort of thing. And I, you know, my jobs growing up were picking rock out of fields, baling hay. I worked at like a pea packing plant, a canning factory, glass factory, just, you know, like really some pretty raw shit. Like, and that's just, you know, how it was. And those were the jobs that were available there. And so that was sort of my deal just all through high school. And then,
it's cool. I like how you're talking about the juxtaposition of the two, exposures. Cause I do believe people that only, experience one of those and don't understand, you know, what rural living is. Not to say that, you know, every summer you have to go out and like farm in the middle, you know, in the Midwest or something, but, you know, to at least visit a town that is, you know, the proverbial one stoplight town or whatever, it just, you know, it rounds you off as a person. And I think, you know, the flip side where, you know, if you get stuck in a rural area and you never experience like the quote unquote big city, you know, you're just like, oh yeah, those are where all the, you know, crazy people live.
Exactly.
But it's cool that you have that pretty balanced perspective.
It was definitely interesting. And so I don't know. I mean, I guess I would like segue this into like how. So California was where my father was from. I have a half brother and half sister. Both at the time when I was growing up lived in Walnut Creek or outside. They were growing up there, and then moved into San Francisco proper, into the Bay Area. And so when I was 8 or 9 years old, my half brother came to visit. So they lived out there, and I'm the only child for my current parents, but my parents are present. But anyway, point being is my brother got into punk out there, and he's 10 years my senior, so he's now 54. And he is, he was at the time, getting into like, you know, heavily influenced into that scene of punk in the late 70s, early 80s. And so that's, so he would come and visit us every now and then and bring me records. And so that's like at a very young age. So I think my first record was 8 or 9. It was called Dead Kennedys, a skateboard party. And it was just this like single thing, but it was, I'll just play it over and over and over again. And he would mention these other bands like Anti-Sect, Throbbing Gristle, Wire. And these, you know, these at the time that were the really big bands. Yes, Dead Kennedys were huge too out there, but they weren't even like, as big at the time. They seem almost bigger now than a band they were at that moment, but in time. But so he was anyway giving me these things, and so that was kind of my indoctrination into that world. Although I was also evenly distributed with my love of just heavy music in general, of what I could get my hands on, which was the more mainstream stuff like. Which was Ozzy and Metallica and stuff like that. I love what your interview with Chris, you did, because he mentions the Columbia cassettes, and that was a huge thing, for me too. And I remember getting all those cassettes in the mail and things like that. And so that was a great way when you're living in a rural environment to, expose yourself very quickly to a bunch of new, interesting stuff. And sometimes you know there's a lot of misses in there too, so, but it only costs a penny, right? So.
Yeah, it's like there's no risk whatsoever. You can take swings and misses all day long on that until they tack you with the, you know, $17.95 shipping and handling on some of that stuff where you're like,
I know.
that's where they get you. But the
And $17.95 when you're 11 years old is a shitload of money.
Yeah, you're bankrupt at that point. You gotta work for like 3 months to hit that off.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Oh boy, today's episode is brought to you by Audible, and they are bringing listeners the world's largest selection of audiobooks and original audio entertainment. Did you know that audiobooks are eligible for Grammy consideration in the Best Spoken Word Album category? I didn't know that. Thank you, Audible, for letting me know. And they have unbelievable performances from Trevor Noah, Kevin Hart, and Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale. Now, I have dove in to I Can't Make This Up by Kevin Hart. He's one of my favorite comedians, and his book kills it. He is so funny. It's just to hear, basically you feel like you're hanging out with Kevin Hart for, you know, 6-7 hours. It's amazing because the intimacy that it creates is so, so good. And so please, trust me, you can listen to that, or you can listen to Trevor Noah's book, or, like I said, The Handmaid's Tale. Who hasn't read or listened to or wanted to consume The Handmaid's Tale? Their Audible wants to make it easy for you. So please, go listen with a 30-day free trial, audible.com/100words. That's the number, 100 words spelled out. That's audible.com/100words to start your free 30-day trial right now. Thanks, Audible. You're the best. Good luck with those Grammys. All right, now on with the show. There was something that I found interesting because, you know, I was familiar with your, you know, the story of, like you said, your half brother being able to introduce you to this stuff. But the music that you're mentioning, yeah, like, dude, I can't even imagine my head wrapping around Throbbing Gristle at 9 years old. Like, how did you even find space in your head for that? Because, I mean, that, like, even as a 36-year-old adult now, I can listen to Throbbing Gristle and be like, oh yeah, I see where they're coming from. But like, if I was 9, I would be like, oh, that doesn't make any sense. Like, this is terrifying or whatever, you know?
Oh yeah, no. I it was sort of incomprehensible. A lot of the stuff he'd give me, well, I would just be like, what the fuck is that? Like, right. I was fascinated by it, you know? I mean, and a lot of times, it took me a while to sort of like lean that way. And like, it took me into my like early teens to sort of like, start to appreciate some of the things that he was giving me. Dead Kennedys were pretty, like, you know, they were tame of the things that I listed off. But if you listen to a band like Anti-Sect from England, blew me away. They were like, what, you know, and Septic Death, for instance, too. Another one, like, you're like, what is this? Like, I can't, what is he saying? You know, like, and a lot of those bands, they're incomprehensible. And so there's that. And then as a young, you know, a child listening to Iron Maiden, you know, where Bruce Dickinson's voice is like, it couldn't be any more crystal clear, going into that, like, sort of like that grungy thing or going into this growl guttural thing. And you're like, oh, I don't even know. I, my hands are tied. Like, I just, so I would, of course, like, I'd probably lean, you know, so it was great because it built an awareness of it, but my appreciation for, like, you know, the Master of Puppets record was probably far greater than my appreciation of like some of that early punk stuff. So
sure, yeah, that makes sense. That's cool. I definitely think there's a certain age in which you are, you know, ready for certain things, and not even so much like, oh wow, you know, people are really mature if they're getting into like, you know, more aggressive or complicated music, but it's just like, you know, sometimes if you get introduced to Neurosis too early, you'll be like, oh yeah, that band sucks. And then 10 years later, you're like, what was I doing? They're incredible or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm still wrapping my head around that one.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's like, who knows?
Mastodon? Yeah, I'm sorry, but like, I still don't get it. And right. Then, yeah, I mean, I'm still 5 Converge records back. You know, I don't know. Like, sometimes, you know.
Yeah, it takes you a while to warm up to stuff. I get it.
Seriously, yeah. I mean, I love Converge, but like, yeah, I mean, they're incredible musicians. It's just a thing. Like, I'm not a musician in the way, like, in the sense, like, I can appreciate some of that stuff, but I can't, it's not everything for me. So some of the like musicianships, I can't geek out about some of that stuff. I just don't have it in me. So
right.
I like certain things. You know, I like, you know, the balalaika and the accordion and stuff like that. So,
right.
But when it gets into like, you know, I don't get it. I can't nerd out about, you know,
yeah. Shredding,
how many,
right. Shredding stuff or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
And so
anyway,
like, I mean, like you mentioned the, you know, previously where, you know, you're like, you weren't a popular kid as you were going through school and that sort of stuff. Like, you know, the, you know, I don't want to typify the experience of, you know, most people that are into punk and hardcore, you know, cause you're, you know, older than me, so technically you are part of a, you know, different class, a graduating class of, you know, the punk and hardcore kids, to where it's like, you know, like, even though I was still weird in school, people still kind of gave me, you know, enough room to, you know, be the weird guy, but then also not, like, treat me like a complete alien. Whereas I'm sure
you also grew up in Southern California, so that helps too.
That's true. That's a good point. But so, you know, what kind of kid did you find yourself being as you started to, you know, develop an identity and start to be, you know, a human being with own choices in, you know, in high school? Like, were you, you know, did you like attempt to be outgoing, or were you just like naturally reclusive? And like, you know, what were you kind of drawn to?
So I was an only child, so I was pretty, you know, independent in a way. So I wouldn't say I was reclusive at all. I just was, but I was a little bit more shy, I would say. But then there was a part of me that was like really into being an introverted extrovert type thing. I guess, so there was this like balance. I would have to find this nice balance. So, but I was not trying to be different in a way that was like, I hate everything and I'm going to be different. It was just like, I just liked what I liked, and it just didn't so happen to be that many people liked that stuff. And part of it was going to California. I learned how to skateboard when I was really young. And I mean, who, you know, if you're a youth in California, it's summer, like all year round, I gravitated more towards that style, that lifestyle. I just really liked it and appreciated it. So I was the only one in my grade I knew of who had a skateboard. And again, mind you, this is the mid-80s. So like, you know, in junior high school, I'm the only kid with a skateboard. And slowly but surely I started to make friends with like younger people as I was getting older and into like sort of the senior year of high school and stuff. And then skateboarding was becoming a little more popular, but again, only a handful of people. That was like, you know, I could count maybe 10, you know, and it was a fairly, you know, it was a larger town that we were. And so that wasn't that many people. So it was, you know, it was definitely hard, but it was kind of cool because I kind of like felt this, like, there was just sort of like that punk mentality with skateboarding that kind of went hand in hand. And a lot of us supported each other in different ways that we could and stuff like that. But I was outgoing. I mean, I was on tennis. I played tennis. I played some baseball. I enjoyed certain things for a while. I really liked tennis a lot. That was fun. So I was tennis, and then I'd go skateboarding after tennis practice.
Nice.
So I was in theater. I was Charlie Sheen's character in the. We did back to back. We did a double feature in the theater. We did Breakfast Club and then Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I was Charlie Sheen's character in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
That's amazing.
There's some really great incriminating photos out there of me and that. And then drugs. Are you into drugs? Right. Are you here for drugs? I guess that's the line. Anyway, it was really good.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So that was really fun. I was totally into theater. I loved doing that. I went on actually with a friend of mine. We did this like improv group for a little while. That was like post high school, but I was really kind of like into the theater scene a little bit in high school, and I really enjoyed that. So yeah, I think I was fairly outgoing. It's just that I was into a lot of weird, obscure things. So it was, you know, such as skateboarding, such as like the music and stuff like that. I mean, music's always just been a fundamental part of my life. And it's just, I think it is for so many of us. And it's just, some people are just like fair weather listeners. I'm fucking listen. I just immerse myself. And so I think some people kind of find that little like hard to take and digest. And I get very passionate about certain things
Well, yeah, you definitely strike me as a person where you're, you know, the temperament, I think, of most people that get drawn to subcultures are people that get obsessive over stuff. You know, it's like your average, you know, whatever, typical high school person, like, yeah, they may care about, you know, football, or they may care, you know, they may like know all the players, know the stats and stuff like that. But, you know, like we're going like seven layers deep on stuff that is like, you know, irrelevant to most mainstream culture perspectives. And so like there's that obsessive nature that I think exists that kind of goes hand in hand with, you know, whatever subculture it is, like you said, whether it's like skateboarding, music, whatever that may be. It's that like you're not just scratching the surface. You're like, yeah, so I'm gonna like live and breathe this thing, and I'm going to exist in it. I'm going to like, you know, take baths with it. I'm going to like do everything with it.
Yeah.
And it's
totally,
you know, and it is alienating, because a lot of people are just like, you know, probably like, and maybe rightfully so, or just like, hey, calm down. Like, you don't need to like be that into it. It's like, no, no, I do. It's like, well, okay. Maybe that works for you, but not for me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there were those people who were, you know, obsessed with certain sports and things like that. And I got it. You know, I understood them. It's just that, you know, aside from that mutual obsession with something, we didn't have anything in common. So it just, you know, it was just about finding those people, you know, and a lot of those. And so I would say, back to your point about saying, like, were you reclusive or were you other? No, but a lot of my friends were. Right. I mean, I had one friend in particular who had to drop out of high school because he was embarrassed by something that happened, you know, and like, I mean, it was just like, you know, I don't know, you know, at the time, I'm a fairly empathetic person, and I feel everything, whether it's, and that's like, it's good and bad trait to have, because it's like feels very burdensome, almost like it's like a self-imposed,
yeah,
you know, it's like self-imposed weight on your skull all the time. But the point is that, you know, I had to seek those people out, and I had to like be extroverted enough to go and like introduce myself and say, hey, listen, you know. And then so a lot of my friends were more of what you're talking about. I was probably less so, but I liked the energy of being around others, and I enjoy it still. But yeah, I do need to have my alone time. But I think that's the majority of us. Like we, you know. And then I think, you know, I remember touring quite a, you know, when we were touring quite a bit in the 90s, I would, you know, I would go play, and then I would need to like be by myself for like an hour. People would want to talk. Where's Dave? And he's like, I would just leave, you know, because I was just like so drained, and I needed to go like, go recharge. And I'm so, but some people can just be on all the time, and I'm just one of those people who like I have to just go and like fucking like crawl inside myself for an hour and like
recharge the batteries.
I just, before I like go and like talk to somebody,
right.
Although there was, so yeah. I mean, I've had, you know, but at the same time, I miss out on some pretty deep, meaningful stuff. And like, so I just gotta jump into this one, because this is probably one of the most like out of body experiences I had when on tour. But so we played in Syracuse, which was essentially our second home in the '90s. And, it was weird how it all worked out, but every time we played Syracuse, even in this last little tour, it was just phenomenal. And, there was just something about the Syracuse in the '90s that was
like an epic. I mean, there was an epicenter. I mean, like there was people,
yeah.
the lore of that city in particular, because it was just weird, because there's no big city feeling to Syracuse. It's very much like, oh yeah, it's just one giant suburb, but like a working class town and not like an affluent suburb. And then it's just weird that all of that stuff sprung up from there. And you know, the fact that you would hear about it,
yeah,
all across the country, it's like, oh yeah, Syracuse, like, yeah, the New Year's Day show or whatever. It's like that just was part and parcel. So I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think it was like actually after one of the New Year's Day shows, we had worked our way up the ranks of that thing and finally headlined it one night or something, or one of those New Year's shows, or maybe it was just another tour altogether. But I just remember this kid coming up to me, and I spoke a lot about, I had a great, so super, super dear friend who committed suicide in the '90s. And he was a guy I knew from high school. And anyway, I wrote a lot about that. in our songs and hinted at it. But of course, the song Lament is that song. And so anyway, the point being is this kid comes up to me after the show is done, and I'm just sitting on stage, and I had said, you know, said a few things to some other people, whatever. But this kid came up to me and said, he told me he was going to kill himself, but he didn't because of what I wrote.
Yeah, that's huge.
And I think that was, getting a little
no
emotional, like I said about it, but it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, that was it. I was like, I'm done. I can't, like, you know, like this kid just essentially, like, you know, if there was one reason I'm doing this, it's to connect. It's to somehow connect with somebody. And this is that example. And this is it. Like there is nothing else. Like this kid's life is the most valuable thing in the world. And he didn't take it. And he decided that he wasn't going to do that. And he was going to, like, seek help. And so we talked for like an hour and a half after the show. And, it was just the most emotional. It was probably the most emotional time I'd ever had playing music by far. Most, you know, that's the way that, like, I mean, not playing it, but like the reason for it, that I didn't even know, you know, I was just like, I was expressing myself over my pain about what had happened and my real, struggle, that loss. I could never imagine what it would be like. In me, I just don't know what it's like for somebody going through these things, but to have somebody talk to you about it in depth and just having a deep conversation about this sort of thing. But it was at Syracuse, it was in Syracuse, and it blew my mind, and I'll never forget it. And I think he like went off like and did some like awesome stuff. And anyway, I think he wrote me a few years after that had happened, and said he's in college or something like that, or whatever, younger guy. But I mean, I was well out of, I mean, yeah. I would, anyway.
No, that's
there's
I,
that.
Yeah. No. That's just incredibly powerful, not only to you, but then just the notion that I think, you know, many people have in regards to, you know, playing in bands and starting to put, you know, you don't, you know, I use this term because we can retroactively look at it as such, but like, you know, when you're putting your art out in the world, you know, you don't think about it in those terms. Like, you're just like, oh, dude, we wrote a cool mosh part, and like, you know, here's this song, and like, yeah, it's meaningful. I'm, you know, exaggerating here, but the notion that stuff affects people and you have no relationship with them beyond the, you know, one-sided nature of them consuming your music. And then once it's confronted to you, you know, that can be overwhelming, emotional, everything that you were just describing. But at the end of the day, that's why people put out what they do, you know, whether it's painting, whatever it is, it's like that connectivity that makes you feel less alone. And it's just awesome when you actually get to, you know, have something tangible beyond a person giving you positive feedback for the set you just played. And you're just like, wow, like, I guess if I didn't exist, if this song didn't exist, like, this person may not exist. And that's like, that's incredibly moving. So yeah, I appreciate you sharing that, dude. That's awesome.
Yeah. I've just been thinking about that. And every so often I think about those times, you know, in retrospect, and I just think they just really helped ground me in the notion that life's too short. And I'm like, I mean, it's this, you know, cheesy phrase, but it is. It's like, and we, you know, you can see by the nature of how many people have like died the past few years and whatever else and whatever other bullshit's going on the earth. It's like, you know, it's so easy to get lost in the mundane and to get upset about this small shit. And it's just, it's overwhelming and all the other shit that's going on. So yeah, it's easy to kind of like go into your little purview there, into your little like 360 at that moment and say, this is what I'm going to be angry about now. And, but yeah, I think that there's a lot to be said, for let's just enjoy what we have when we have it and as we have it, versus, you know, looking to the, you know, I'm all about like thinking about the future and planning, but I'm at the same time, you know, I think these, what we have in the past is so tangible that we sometimes forget about it and we don't apply it in ways that are smarter and let ourselves live more positively because of those things. And we sort of just are always thinking about what's next. Yeah. And not what's happened how has that affected us, and how does that relate to how I am outwardly projecting myself now, and things like that. So I don't know. There's just some, you know, that again, did not expect that to go there, but no, anyway.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty of a conversation. You sometimes never know where it's going to go. But the
my God.
No, but I appreciate it. I mean, it's like that. These are the moments in which you can reflect on certain things and kind of, you know, put things not only in perspective for yourself, but yeah, you know, I'm glad we're here.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Oh boy, we have another favorite of mine that's hanging out with us on the show. We're hanging out with Casper today. And Casper, if you are not aware, is a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. They've got three models now. They have the original Casper, the Wave, and the Essential. Casper mattresses are absolutely perfectly designed to soothe and cradle your natural geometry, right? Did you ever think you were a math problem? Well, you are. Not to mention, the breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulates your body temperature throughout the night. And it's delivered right to your door in a small, seriously, how did they do that, size box with free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada. The best part is that you can be sure with your purchase that you get 100 nights on this thing. And if you don't like it, you can return it. And after all, you spend 1/3 of your life sleeping, so you should be comfortable. Now, honestly, I have a Casper. This thing is incredible. The box is unbelievable. You know, you take it into your bedroom, you pop it open, springs to life, toss it down on your your box spring or wherever it is you're sleeping, and then you get on it and you're just like, oh my gosh, like I'm never ever going to sleep on anything but a Casper for the rest of my life. And my wife also was like, okay, like I don't know, maybe I'm a little skeptical because, like, you know, usually you go to a mattress store, and I was like, we're not going to a mattress store, it's a terrible idea. She laid on it and was like, oh my gosh. And she is a hot sleeper, which means that you know, she runs hot, and this mattress has done incredible, incredible wonders for that. So anyways, start sleeping ahead of the curve with Casper, and you get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/words and using words at checkout. That's casper.com/words, offer code words for $50 off your mattress purchase. And of course, terms and conditions apply. Casper, I love it. You'll love it. Sleep better. All right, now on with the show.
You know, your lineage as far as, you know, playing with, you know, local bands like, you know, Pillar and Rain and like all the stuff that you were involved in. But the notion of you, you know, getting involved and like, you know, singing was very much, you know, by sort of default, where it's just like, oh yeah, like you don't play any other instruments, so, you know, here's Dave, I guess he can just yell. Was there ever, mm-hmm. you know, as you started to, you know, become very active in the scene, like, did you have, I guess, visions for stuff beyond just, you know, playing in bands and everything? Like, I know obviously graphic design is a passion of yours. Was it one of those things where you were kind of just like, oh yeah, this band stuff's awesome, but like, you know, it's really like not, you know, not based in any fact that I'm going to become a rock star or anything like that. You know, but how did all that stuff kind of congeal in your head?
Yeah, when I mean, like you said, you know, when I think a lot of people know and they've heard and or read about this, and like that I started off doing this really by happenstance. I was always drawn to doing, like, even in lip sync bands, I was the front man. I mean, we did a, like, in high school, I did a, this band that did a Gang Green cover. But it lip synced. It was hilarious. Nobody knew what to say. We had cardboard amps, and we just knocked that shit off, and we just like lit one on fire, and then got, and then I had to spend a week at home because I got detention and, or what was that? What's the thing? Suspension and stuff. And anyway, all that stuff happened, but you know, I was always drawn to that. And I think it sort of just kind of fell into my lap, and then it was always just this outlet, and it would never, yeah, like you said, we started Harvest in a living room, me and Eric, and we're like, let's just, he had a broken leg at the time. He'd come back from Colorado recently, and so he's like, you know, sitting with a broken leg in my living room, and we're like, and I really liked him, and so we just kind of started this thing because we both just had a passion for this scene and for the music and stuff. And in 93 it was, and then we and at the same time he and I were both kind of on different paths but similarly rooted in the discipline of design. I was more of a traditional graphic designer. He started off that way, but then went to more typography and type design, and he now owns like this amazing type studio called Process Type Foundry here in Minneapolis too. And but he went one way and I went the other way, in the sense, but we were still doing Harvest at the time, all through the 90s. And then at a certain point, you know, Harvest got to the point where it was kind of as big as it was gonna get, and we thought anyway, and or I well, let's just say I personally I kind of thought it had plateaued, and it was just, I sat in a room with the guys and we had this conversation, very frank conversation. And during Harvest, I had been working both at the university where I was going, and then I had, gotten into an agency, my very first agency, and, design agency. And I was really excited. I was doing some cool stuff, but I was still touring and we're still writing the One Step Closer 7-inch and stuff. And I started to just lean more towards I just started to have more of this like idea that like I wanted to see where design could take me, and the music was taking me where I wanted it to go at the time, and it was great, but it wasn't there was just a big, there was a greater need in me to like see what I could do with design and see what I see where I could go with that. And I think that that, and unfortunately locally, it didn't, there wasn't a lot going on at the time, or at least I wasn't networked enough, but I, this is back when monster.com like actually worked. And it was like a thing for like tech and coders and designers and stuff. And, so I just put my stuff out there, and then all of a sudden I get a call from New York saying, "Hey, do you want to, we've got a project. Do you want to interview?" And so I flew out and I interviewed, and I got the gig. And, so it was just, it was just like a 6-month project. But the point was, is that I had this opportunity to go do that. And so I had to make some really like hard choices at the time. And it was, so I sat, everybody sat in the room, and we hashed it out, and everybody, you know, those people who, I think we all agreed that it was like, this is it. We are at this, like, we're at the top of this thing that we're on the top of this ride, and we can either go, we can go further and see where it takes us, and, or we can just call it. And my vote was just to call it. And I wanted to take this job to New York. And so I wanted to see where I could go with that and where that would take me to on whatever ride that was going to be. And so that was, you know, that was a hard choice to make, but I also wanted to end Harvest on a big note. And I knew that the One Step Closer 7-inch was like, to me, probably, I mean, I love the God Complex record, but I thought we had reached, like, I wanted to go out on a high note. Let's just say that. I never thought we'd ever play again.
Right.
And that was, but I really wanted to go off on a high note. And I thought that this was like, if I'm going to do it, this is going to be it. And let's do it right. And that's when we had our, you know, show with Nora, Disembodied and Bane and stuff like that. And that was awesome here. And there were like 3,000 plus people. And it was awesome. And it was, I'll never forget it. But I chose to, yeah, to see where life would take me in this realm. And yeah, and I've been, you know, I've been pretty happy. I did that. And then I went off to start my own little thing for a little while, and I worked at my own studio for a little while, and then now I work for, you know, I work for a huge agency now and design, and I work with, you know, customer experience and design and stuff like that. But it's I enjoy it.
That's rad.
I've been doing it for a long time, and I love it, man. But I'll still never stop playing music, and I'll still never stop thinking about it and wanting to do it even when I'm not doing it. And it's been a number of years now since this other little thing that we were doing, which is some of the core members of, like, me and Dan from Harvest, we're doing, called City of God, and we have 5 songs. All the music's done, essentially. Well, I think Kevin used to do guitar, but and this is Kevin Call, and he was also in you met Kevin. He was in Season of Fire, and then yep. He's also in the Good. He was also in Comeback Kid, mm-hmm. and the Good Fight too. But, yeah. So he's got, that kid, he's awesome. And so anyway, but he needs to record his guitar, and I need to finish my vocals. But we have 5 songs, which I'm really, really proud of, and we need to get those out to the world. So we'll see what happens and when that happens. But
nice.
It's all, yeah.
That's cool.
But drums, Dan, and the bass are all done. So, yeah.
Nice. A few last things I want to hit on before I let you go is the something I found interesting about, you know, from the whatever 96 to, you know, early 2000s bands in the, you know, whatever metal/hardcore metalcore thing. It seems like there was, you know, 1 or 2 songs from bands that, you know, really kind of propelled them to a higher level of, you know, just basically being nationally recognized and being able to tour and that sort of stuff. And, you know, clearly Epicure was your song where it was like, you know, everyone puts on their mixtapes and all that sort of stuff. Like, you know, and then even, you know, when we toured together and with Season of Fire, and, you know, you did that as a sort of, you know, encore last song sort of thing. Did you kind of recognize that as well? I mean, in regards to, like, not only the fact that you knew that Epicure was kind of, you know, your most popular song as far as a crowd reaction was concerned, but, like,
I don't know. I just really noticed that happening where it was like, you know, bands that did have that song or two all of a sudden, you know, I wouldn't put it the same way as like, you know, radio airplay, but like, yeah, you know, the quote unquote singles popped. Did you kind of notice that?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, that was, and it's funny because like, I mean, I love that song when that song was written in our practice space, I was just like, what is that? Like, how did that even, like, yeah, it was, I can remember standing there and my jaw dropping when Eric started playing that riff. And I was just like, okay, kill me now. Like that's the greatest thing. And then, you know, I mean, Papa Roach did it a little better, but I think that it was, I think that I had a kid come up to me and, I met Chris and Matt at the Black Blue Bowl when Judge did their first reunion show. And there was this guy, I met this guy and he's like, oh, you were in Harvest. He's like, I would watch a whole set of you doing Epicure 10 times in a row. And, it just made me laugh. So yeah, it was kind of one of those things where I feel like if we just did a 45 of that, we'd be, man, oh, that would have been fine. But instead we have to play all these other songs too. So, but Ray, forgive me. I don't know if this, it just doesn't, you know, to me, it's just another one of our songs, but yeah, I think it's a good one on it. But I think it's quite, to be honest, it's quite flattering that like, so I guess, you know, Chokehold saw this band in Flufffest last, you know, just this summer who played Epicure as a song. So I'm like, it still holds some relevance to some people, and that's interesting, and you know that's awesome, and I think it's, you know, it's cool that people still want to listen to it from time to time. So
yeah no, for sure, it's cool. You know, the thing that I also noticed was, you know, because Minneapolis and, you know, that the Twin Cities area, you know, became such a you know, a vibrant scene of, you know, bands like you guys, Threadbare, you know, Disembodied, you know, Code 13, like so much random stuff came from that area. And, you know, yes, it was attached to a college and, you know, those cities are, you know, bands do come through on tours there and they're, you know, there's a reason it makes sense that a scene pops up there. But, you know, for all intent and purposes is that the scene was also isolated by the fact that, you know, you guys were so far, you know, north from everything else, and it wasn't a easy routing up there in regards to bands playing there and stuff. I guess did, you know, as the scene started to, you know, grow into maturity and you guys had more places to play, like, did it feel like there was something special, or was it just one of those things where you're like, oh, cool, like more places to play? Like, could you recognize it as it was happening?
But yeah, we could recognize it growing, definitely, because there was a more younger generation. So there was like me and like a couple years younger, like, cause you gotta think of the time frame as well. Like, I mean, so I come from southern Minnesota, and Minneapolis was actually like, for me, it was very special to come up here and see shows. And so I would like, friends and I would like get in a car and like go up and we'd go see, we would basically go to the, what was called the 7th Street Entry. It's a small venue directly next to First Avenue, which is the big Prince Club. And, anyways, we would go to like whatever was there. And it wasn't like necessarily, we wouldn't know what a band might sound like seeing the band Inside Out. They had no 7-inch at the time. I think it came out like following it, but like they played with Shelter and Quicksand. And, but it was like, who, you know, like we didn't know
right
who these bands, we didn't know who these bands were. We just showed up because it was called the Hardcore Matinee. And we were just like, we're going like, check this out. Like, and 411 at a house, you know, and things like that. So that was like the upbringing was seeing these like pretty infamous acts now, pretty legendary. But at the time it was just like, okay, we're just going to go see this band and they're wearing they look like a bunch of skaters and we're going to go and they're playing some pretty heavy stuff. Cool. And you know, little did we know that we would, you know, we were basically witnessing, you know, some of the like the, you know, like hardcore staples You know, I mean, Daniel Mahoney, for instance, you know, it's just like, it was so awe-inspiring. And so I think that, like, the fact that bands, like, went out of their way to come here, and I owe a lot to, like, Felix von Havoc and Jason Parker, who did THD Records. I lived at the THD house, and where I got to witness a lot of stuff. Well, that was like pre-Harvest, pre even Krakatoa maybe. But and he put out the Judge, the Chunk Ink and Suck It 10-inch. But he had a lot of connections, and Four While Falling came and played our basement. Clutch played our basement. These kinds of bands would just show up Mean Season. It was awesome. And so that was really, the more bands came and the more there were houses to promote these bands, the larger our scene got, the more interest there was. And we had, luckily enough, we had a lot of foundational bands, where a lot of the members went on to do like Threadbare, for instance. And, so there was always music going on here. It's always kind of found its way to be a little different, and there is no placing any sort of like label on any one band per se that came out in the late 80s, early 90s. And I think that we never took it for granted. And if we did, I don't know in what way, but venues were, there was that bigger venue, like I said, 7th Street Entry, and then there was the smaller house shows and things like that. And it's to give its history is like a long conversation, but like the point is that I think Minneapolis, Minnesota in general has had a very unique point of view. Not to say every city doesn't, it's just, this one is the one I know and love and I came from. And I feel like, you know, there's influences of all these different things, but there's no like, and we all co-played together. But there was just respect for each person's take on what they felt was alternative music. And that includes like ska and oi and whatever else was going on at the same time. And it was just like, there, you know, whatever wave or whatever genre had come into the mix at the time, it was all really well respected and all played together harmoniously. And we didn't have a lot of like infighting and like a bunch of that, like a lot of that shit that you would hear about in other cities. And I think that there was just a tremendous amount of, talent that came out, and a lot of tremendous amounts of like, points like really great points of view, and people really open to sharing that sort of thing, and a lot more just dialogue. A lot of bands just talked a lot in the 90s.
Yeah.
Half our set was like talking. I remember spending like 15 minutes talking about like my experiences in Yugoslavia before playing the song 101 to the University of Winnipeg, and there were 400 people there, and they just listened. And it was so nice. Like, it was just like, they were into it. And we had dialogue afterwards about what, you know, and things. And I was just like, okay, that was just normal. And now of course it's a little different, but, just don't talk. But anyway, the point is that like, I always felt that this city produced some pretty unique and, pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Music.
Totally. I mean, I think it's, I just love it when a city can, have an identity that is, you know, wrapped up in all of these disparate music scenes, but they all kind of come under one umbrella of being like, well, yeah, this is like just kind of the independent music scene, and like everyone's kind of doing their own thing. And yes, of course, that happens around the country, but then certain scenes kind of have these, you know, focal points and bands kind of colliding all at one time. And that's when, you know, you're able to to see that, notice it. And it's just, yeah, it's cool, especially from an outsider's perspective like mine, where, you know, I only played a couple shows up there, but it was just like, oh, wow. Like, and it's cool because even after, you know, the original bands that, you know, started the scene break up, you know, most of these people stay active in some respects and are playing in other bands. And then you start to see their new bands pop up, and it's just, you know, it's cool because the legacy lives on in a very positive way, not in just like a, oh, yeah, like you said, a geriatric way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, I think there's a time and place for let's just say reunions and things like that. But then there's also this, like, so for me, and I'm just speaking personally, but like, you know, there was a time and place for artists to do certain things, and like after we had said, oh, we're done. And then there's the future. And then there's like, you know, then there's like the now, like I want to do something that I haven't done before, or I want to do something, you know, that may sound like just about everything else, but I want to do it because, you know, I feel like I still got stuff to say, and I've still got a, you know, I still feel this validity in like playing this because it's entrenched in me, and it's ingrained in my heart and in my head that this is like, if I don't do this, I kind of come apart. So I you know, will continue to play music for as long as my structure allows me to. So,
right.
You know, I just, you know, it's just how it is. And I, you know, whether Harvest gets asked to play somewhere, or like, you know, we'll probably do that. But if not, we'll, you know, we're all actively trying to do something new and different. And yeah, and we all, you know, I'm not going to stop doing that.
Yeah, that's really cool. One last thing I want to hit on was the, you know, and I don't know if you are interested in talking about this, but, you know, I think it's kind of relevant based on the fact that, you know, all the other topics that we discussed was, you know, the bike accident that you were in, because, you know, that's obviously not something that, you know, is covered on hardcore news websites and stuff like that. But
For fuck's sake, yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose.
But I mean, you know, that was a pretty, you know, severe thing that you went through. I don't know if you kind of wanted to, you know, walk through that and, you know, talk about, you know, your experience with that, and obviously how it, you know, altered your perspective, or, you know, made you think about things in a different light.
Yeah, I mean, in purpose of context, I'll say, so I was riding my bike, not home, but rather to pick up my son from preschool. And then I essentially what I can remember was that was the last thing. I was crossing a street, I believe, you know, and then the next thing I know, it's 8 hours later and I'm in a hospital bed, and my wife, I see this note next to me, and my wife and son are there. And it says that I've been, struck in the head. And at the time in Minneapolis, there was this guy, I believe it's a guy, whatever, but like with a truck bed filled with just throw rock or cement blocks at cyclists. And I was, and they were 90% sure that's what happened to me because of the way I was, due to my injuries and things like that I'd been struck. And at the place that I was where it happened was very protected from, was right next to the road, but very protected from any sort of like line of sight. And at the time of day at which I was going, which is about between 12:30 and 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So from that I have no memory of when I was struck to from the moment of impact to, you know, to that moment when I woke up in the hospital. I have no memory of that. So, other than just like feeling really confused and insane, I guess And what had happened was, I have no recollection of doing this, but I called my wife and I told her that I didn't know, I think I had maybe told her where I was, or I didn't know what I was doing or something like that. But she had she went and picked up our son and then brought me to the ER. And I had been, you know, but I had, so for every 10 minutes I would wake, I would come to, and I'd be like, what happened? So for like every 10 minutes for like hours upon hours, she would have to retell me the story. I couldn't retain it until eventually, like it was, you know, 8 o'clock at night when I finally like started to get memory back. So it was quite something. And so from that I had, you know, about, you know, a few months, about for brain trauma. And so I had to go and I had to go to counseling or whatever it was, like sort of to, you know, and sort of figure out, should I read, you know, can you still remember this, or can you, you know, can you do this or that thing or whatever? But yeah, it wasn't a good experience. And, it's definitely made me a little more shy, of when I'm cycling, of certain, you know, knowing, being more cognitive about and aware of where I am spatially, of where I bike, but it certainly hasn't like diminished my love for cycling. And I, you know, I ride hopefully, well, I ride almost daily, depending on my son's schedule and my wife's. So, but yeah,
that's, yeah, no, it's great. Yeah. And the only reason I bring that up is just because it, you know, people go through traumatic events and, you know, just the experience that you have when stuff like that brushes up against you is like, oh, like, yeah, like anything can happen at any time. Like, you know, I know it sounds so obvious to say that, but like you don't really think about it until it's like literally right in front of you.
No, totally. No, it was definitely true. Definitely true. I mean, it could have been a lot worse. I didn't have anything broken, you know, but I had amnesia and a deep concussion and, you know, and I should really, you know, never ride without a helmet. And I had one on, but I mean, I should never ride with one without one anyway, but yeah. Especially anymore.
Yeah.
Not good. So, yeah, that was more than intense. So,
yeah, absolutely. And the truly last thing I want to hit on was the notion of, you know, you know, having a family, wife, son, and, you know, the ideas that you have, you know, brought over in regards to all of your upbringing within the punk and hardcore scene, as far as, you know, politics and experiences and all of this, you know, the DIY principles that you've lived your life kind of surrounded by, you know, how do you feel that kind of impacts your, you know, view on, you know, being a dad and that sort of stuff, just because, you know, I mean, I'm asking selfishly because I exist in the same framework as you, but I always like to have that perspective from, you know, others who, have the same experience.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really, for me, it's, you know, and he's 5 and a half. He's getting into what he's getting into. And I just want him to make his own decisions. He often will come up with the question like, so I'm an atheist but it's up to him to decide, on that sort of thing. So I'll like, he'll come up and he'll say, Papa, what's a church? What do they do in a church? What's prayer? You know, like all these things, what's God, you know, these sorts of things, these sorts of questions and things like that. So, you know, I tell him and he's like, but why don't you do it? And I was like, I don't believe in it. And, you know, but you might, you know, and if you want to, that's okay. You know, because at the end of the day, it's not about me. It's about him and about what he wants. And so I hope that, you know, I just want him to have a point of view on it at some point. He's 5 and a half. So for fuck's sake, no, I mean, I can't expect him to have like, you know, he's got his point of view on like, I like sugar right now. And I like, you know, he likes certain things and, you know, but he's of course asking a lot of questions about, this or that thing. And, you know, he's very inquisitive and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, I just want him to be able to make his own. I want him, as he matures, to, that doesn't apply to what, like, in my life, you know, and me exposing him to certain things. I definitely want to do that, but when he's ready, and I just, you know, as we're easing into things, as he matures, you know, I definitely want him to understand that, like, of like how I grew up and the music that I played and stuff like that. And he kind of, yeah, you know, I've played some of that music for him, and he'll run around the house going, rah, 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 you know, and, which I think is really fun. And, you know, he'll do some, you know, couch stage dives and stuff like that for me. And, but at the end of the day, you know, he's just mimicking what he sees or hears. And, you know, I hope that, you know, maybe he'll like it. Maybe he'll not. Maybe he'll like something like Taylor Swift, I guess. I don't know. A lot of youth seem to be into that.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's cool. Yeah, you're giving him the space to be the human being that he, you know, he needs.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I mean, no, but the reality is he's not. He has opinions on things. He is his own little. He is his own little being, and he is, you know, he's got his opinions already on a lot of things, and he's gonna figure it out and stuff. But I'm not gonna not let him know what else is out there. You know, I think that, like, any parent should, is like, yes, okay, I want him to see more than just what maybe the media shows him or his teachers or stuff like that. And I mean, I want him to know, you know, he seems to love art and he seems to love music. And so foundationally from at 5 and a half, I'm like, thank you. Like, that's awesome. He wants music class every day. He just told us this morning, I believe. And rather than having gym, and I'm like, hell yes. Yeah. Well, that sounds amazing. I want you to have music class every day too. And if not at school, why don't we have it at home? You know? And if, like, you want to have art class all the time, let's just, you know, do more of that. And I think, you know, my wife is wonderful, and she's with, you know, she's teaching him watercolors and mixing watercolors and things like that. And, like, drawing with him quite a bit and stuff. So that's just all of these things, just like, just watching him flourish and just like letting him draw his giant spiders or his son with many tentacles. And, you know, it's, you know how it is.
Yeah, no, that's really, really cool. Well, Dave, thank you for hanging out, man. This was fun. I hope I didn't jar too many emotional memories in there, but this was, very, very good.
No, thank you. Thank you. This was fun. And I had no idea I'd be talking about half this shit right now. So, but yeah, but thanks for having me, and I appreciate it, Ray. And if all my fingers are crossed, that I will hopefully see you in December.
That was that, and that's what's up, right? Yeah. For those of you that have listened to the show for quite some time, know that I have difficulty trying to figure out the proper words to get out of the interview and into the outro. But yeah, I would say that's what's up, because I thought that was funny. So anyways, thank you very much, Dave, for taking his lunch break out of his busy day and hanging out with me. I just love that. And so that's what we got for this week, obviously. And next week is Ryan Downey, a good friend of mine who is a man about town, because he has a ton of different interests, from a podcaster, from a freelance writer, from a manager, from a vocalist of an incredible band called Burn It Down. He's just done a lot. And I had to have him on the show because he does. I actually had a portion of the interview that him and I did, gosh, this was like 3.5 years ago. And we talked for like an hour, and I felt like I got nowhere because we just, we were just hanging out. And that didn't go anywhere. But this one was more focused, and we got it done. So that's next week. And that's all I really got for you. Okay. So please be safe, everybody. And please, please, please visit my friends at movie.com/words, and you'll be able to get a 30-day trial. Please, you'll love this service. The movies they have on there are spectacular. All right, talk to you later.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com.
Shh. The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.